This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF Baton Rouge. Coming today on the show, we'll visit with Egyptian activist and singer, man of the opera, Ashraf Sawalem. He has some thoughts about what's going on in his homeland, and he is visiting Baton Rouge. Also, John Word of the Baton Rouge Advocate on the Oscar ceremony Sunday night. A couple of Louisiana offerings are up for big awards. Django Unchained and Beast of the Southern Wild. We'll talk with John Word about this and about some recent events. It's been a big time for big performers in Baton Rouge. And Anam Tubton, the spiritual leader from Tibet who makes his way to Baton Rouge about once a year, he'll talk about the epidemic of immolation in his home country. All this, now the news on 89.3 WRKF. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge, and our guest to begin our show is Ashraf Sawalem. He is a fabulous opera performer from Egypt, and a week from today, March 1st, at the River Center, he will be on stage as part of Opera Louisiane's presentation. The New York Times has hailed Ashraf in his debut at Lincoln Center as a standout performer. Opera News describes his voice as purring and velvety and easily produced. Good morning to you, Ashraf Sawalem.
Good morning, Jim.
How about that voice? Good to hear your voice and see you in person, and you're arriving early for a performance next week in Baton Rouge.
Well, actually, it's quite a short rehearsal period, but it's quite intense. They hired a really nice stable of singers who are all very well experienced, and we finished staging it yesterday, so we have a whole week to refine things.
And opera performers such as you, accomplished people, you just don't show up and do a concert 2 hours later. It's a process, isn't it?
For putting an opera together, yes. You start by blocking it, and then you start adding the different elements. We have some orchestra rehearsals. We have some staging rehearsals. We try the costumes on, and then we start adding those elements together during production week. Mm-hmm. Then we have today a day off.
You're a bass, so the voice that you have perfected, what was the process? When did you know you had the pipes to do this?
I actually fell in love with opera before I knew I had a voice. I was not born with an immediately impressive one, but I was watching Aida at the Pyramids in the late 80s, 1987 to be exact, and I fell in love with the process more than the performance. You know, someone got me a pass to the final dress rehearsals, and it was an international cast, and I mean, cheesy as it might sound, I actually, you know, had an epiphany or got my calling that night. I said, you know, I want this to be my life. And I thought about it hard for a year during my junior year as an architecture student in Cairo University. And when I was ready for it, I met the person who became my teacher in Cairo, with whom I studied for 4 years privately, finished my architecture degree. And then came and studied at the University of Colorado at Boulder in the 90s, did a bachelor and master's together, 92 to 96. Then I have been back here in this country since 02, did a doctorate, and immigrated.
So your doctor, Ashraf Sawalem, where did you get your degree?
Also University of Colorado at Boulder.
You live in Boulder, Colorado now.
I'm back there now, yes.
Okay. Ashraf Sawalem, in New Zealand, they described him as hard to better, both vocally and dramatically. He will be on stage next Friday night at the River Center. The performance is?
Elixir d'amore, which means the elixir of love.
Well, then that's perfect for a man who has some world experience, and you look like a man who has some world experience.
Well, it's interesting. My character actually sells himself as a man who has world experience, but he's a quack doctor. He sells wine as an elixir that is good for everything. And there's an interesting twist because the tenor, the romantic character, asks him if he also sells the elixir that awakens love in the hearts of everybody else. And I sell him the same wine that I've sold to everybody, telling him that this, you know, will take just a day to take effect. And I, of course, I'm hoping I will have gotten away with the loot. And just the wine takes down his inhibitions, so he starts becoming nonchalant and more confident. And then, lo and behold, the girls, and especially the girl of his interest, start falling in love with him. And then, of course, in another interesting twist of fate, he suddenly becomes a millionaire because his rich uncle dies. And then suddenly the whole village is interested. And I start believing that my wine actually has superior powers.
The Man from Cairo will be on stage a week from tonight. Ashraf Sawalem, who is an activist, and we'll get to his role in Egypt. He's been prominent in his homeland as well. Now, what do you do to protect that great voice of yours?
I do a lot of shutting up, interestingly enough. I mean, opera singers love to talk, and they love to eat, and they love to go out. But we spend a lot of hours by ourselves in hotel rooms because you're very much like an Olympic athlete, just with this set of muscles in your throat. And you exercise them, and then you rest them.
How do you exercise them?
Very much like, you do vocal eases that are targeted to strengthen different aspects of the instrument. And my doctorate is in vocal pedagogy as well, so I know a little more scientific, in-depth scientific stuff about the instrument. But then you do a lot of resting as well.
So you try not to talk too much?
No, not around performance time. Mm-hmm. That's why we have to have a day off before we open. Now,
do you ever go into smoky bar rooms or anything like that?
No. And that's a problem whenever I go back to Egypt, of course, because here in this country, we don't smoke in bars anymore even. I mean, nobody's allowed to smoke in bars, even in England, if you can believe it. So you go back to Egypt.
Believe me, there are a few bars here where people do smoke, but... you do not smoke, I don't think.
No, I don't. But I grew up in a smoking culture in Egypt. Mm-hmm. I was.
And not so long ago, a generation ago, people who were singers, great singers.
Yes.
They smoke.
And there are lots of great singers, without naming names, who are also chain smokers. And it just depends on how it affects your instrument. If I smoke a cigarette, my voice is raw for 2 days. But I know people who can smoke 2 packs of cigarettes and go on stage and sing like gods. So it's just
now, it used to be a stereotype that opera singers had to be big, hefty people, that somehow all that fat was helpful to singing. You're not a big man in that regard. You're big and you're tall man, but not fat.
Well, it's got nothing to do with the need for the instrument. We just eat too damn much. you rehearse until 10 p.m. and then you're famished because you really exert a lot of energy in your rehearsal. You go out late at night and you sort of unwind before you go to bed, and you have a big meal, and of course guaranteed that you'll gain weight. But yesterday I reminded myself one more time, have healthy snacks during the rehearsal so that you don't have to binge eat after.
You look like you work out.
Well, it depends. I'm lazy when it comes to working out. I should be working out more, but I do hit the treadmill every now and then, but not regularly.
But that wind power, where does that come from?
Well, that's practicing, exercising. I mean, if you touch any opera singer, including Pavarotti, bless his soul, who was
huge.
Larger than a
huge.
Ship. He was huge.
Larger than a ship.
when he, those who worked closely, in close proximity to him, they said his abs were unbelievable when it came to breathing, because you exercise those muscles, but you also put a lot of pasta on them.
Ashraf Sawalem, 297-5633 or 877-217-5757. If you'd like to talk to this fine gentleman who is from Cairo, now lives in Boulder, Colorado, and he's in Baton Rouge for a week getting ready for next Friday night's performance at the River Center. And acting, that's a different craft than singing, but you do both well. How did you develop your ability as a performer on stage?
When I came to the United States in the 90s, I chose to do a minor in theater. And I chose a degree in my university that included 15 credits in theater. It took 5-6 credits, and then I realized very quickly from my mentor in Egypt that you really need to be just as good as an actor as a singer. Otherwise, this art form will die, because the credibility, the dramatic credibility that's becoming more and more important to people, is lacking. So a lot of us have to now become better actors, and hopefully just as good actors as singers.
Well, as I mentioned, you are from Egypt, and you were the first Egyptian person, I understand, who participated in an election free election in your country. How and when did that happen?
Well, I was singing Rigoletto in New Zealand, which mm-hmm. you know explains things. It's the first time zone of the day, and it was the presidential election in May, June last year, where we were casting votes for our first freely elected president, and I was the first one at the Egyptian consulate voting.
And you were also at the square, Tahrir Square, when all hell broke loose.
Well, no, actually. I was in Tahrir Square later, but I was in New York in February 2011. I was in Egypt just 1 week before all hell broke loose, doing the magic flute in Arabic for the Alexandria Library. But we smelled that revolution in the air. There was just so much despair, and people had this "I have nothing to lose" look on their faces. But I was in New York. I participated in all the demonstrations in front of the Egyptian consulate and at Times Square. And then I became the de facto Egyptian national anthem singer for all the demonstrations in New York at that time. Later in the year, I went to Egypt to do a world premiere, a new opera. For the Alexandria Library also, and it was in June 2011, and I did the whole sit-in all July, where the demonstrators were demanding that Mubarak be put on trial.
So, what do you think about that?
Well, it was important that he was put on trial, and you know that he was held accountable. But of course, the revolution playbook is being sped through. If you look at history of revolutions, most governments that came after the government against which people revolted are also very despotic regimes. And now we have the Muslim Brotherhood, unfortunately. But the social media, Twitter and Facebook, are speeding things because the communication is just worldwide. I have been involved with support system, communication support system to demonstrators on the street while I was here in the States. It's actually quite incredible to be able to do that from afar.
What do you see happening in Egypt forward?
I can't really predict. It entirely depends on the people. If people stay on the street, they put a spoke in the wheel of the powers to be it, foreign powers that are interested in the outcome or manipulating the outcome, or the Muslim Brotherhood that are that are in charge right now. They are being heavily discredited. The common person on the street is very disillusioned with the Muslim Brotherhood. Lots of people try to give them the benefit of the doubt because Egyptians are, moderately pious. More than moderately, I'm afraid they have mm-hmm. been for the last 20 years because of basically Saudi investment in Islamizing our society. Now people are getting a lot more disillusioned with them, including people in my family. My family split between liberals and conservatives. And hopefully it's a matter of time before people oust them.
2975633 for our fabulous guest, Ashraf Sawalem, HB in Denham Springs. HB, you're on the air.
Thank you. Sir, if you remember, I think history serves me correct, and Jim Nabors, Gomer Powell of Mayberry, being a cappella choir and singing in numerous operas, what was your opinion of his particular talent, sir? Thank you.
Do you recall Jim Nabors? Probably not. It's the guy who was on Gomer Pyle from 1965 to 1970 with kind of a squirrely voice, but when he sang, he sounded like an opera singer. Sometimes people's speaking voice is much different than their singing voice.
Well, I have a speaking voice, a special speaking voice that I ended up using for 6 years working for Disney. Even though I'm a bass singer, I ended up having to develop my squirrely voice as the Arabic dubbing voice of Mickey Mouse. And so I guess I'm doing the opposite.
So you're the Arabic voice for Mickey Mouse.
Yes, I was music director for dubbing Disney into Arabic for 6 years. And I ended up doing numerous characters. I guess my claim to fame is Mickey. But my favorite part was voice matching actors who couldn't sing to save their lives. And I think the pinnacle of that was when I sang to voice match the actress who did Ursula the Sea Witch in Little Mermaid. So Poor Unfortunate Souls in Arabic is on YouTube.
2975633 877-217-5757 outside the area. We'll return with Ashraf Sawalem and also in the none-too-distant future, John Word of The Advocate. This is Jim Engster. You are listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge, and one of the splendid singers on the planet, Ashraf Sawalem. He is with us for a few more moments, and then we'll hear from a man who reviews musical performers, and he's here to talk about some recent performances as well as the Oscars. John Word of The Advocate. 297-5633. Ashraf Sawalem, who now lives in Boulder, Colorado, preparing for next Friday's performance at the River Center here in Baton Rouge. Now, Ashraf Sawalem, you grew up in the Middle East. What are the biggest misconceptions people in the United States have about people who grew up in your neck of the woods?
I think one of the most mutual misconceptions is how alike we are, how similar we are, than how different. When I came to the States, I realized that, you know, the people are a different entity from the government. The government does not always represent what the people are about. American people are, you know, very much like the Egyptians. They're fun. They love family. They congregate around food. And I think the misconceptions are mutual. We have a lot of stereotypes about religion and about society. And, I mean, you go to Egypt, and I have lots of American friends who live in Egypt, and they were supposed to be there for a couple of weeks, and that have been there for the last 25 years. And they go there, you fall in love with the people, and I think just people need to start talking to each other instead of watching each other on the news.
What does the average Egyptian think of what's going on in Iran right now?
Iran?
Yes.
Right now. Well, Iran is interesting because it's finally the heavily controlled image and relationship with Iran that was imposed by Hosni Mubarak is breaking up, because we had Ahmadinejad in Egypt speak in the conference of Muslim countries, and they're starting to question, you know, again, the stereotypes about what it is to be Shiite, what it is to be, you know, non-Sunni. And they know for sure that they don't want an Iranian-style government or a Sunni version of an Iranian-style government to perpetuate in Egypt. They realize that the Iranian people are very much like the Egyptian people. They have a very strong secular culture within the society that has been hijacked by the government that was there for 30 years, and how much it had hurt the country. So we are benefiting, I believe, from the lesson that Iran has gone through.
What about Israel and Egypt and other countries in the Middle East?
That's unfortunate, because, you know, the whole thing about Israel is still very dogmatized, very manipulated. There is a very strong sentiment against normalization with Israel, cultural and social normalization, which I think is the key to solving the conflict, is that when people start talking to each other, again, rather than governments, this is when we start, you know, taking the myth out of what we think about each other. And, you know, we clump each other in just one, mm-hmm. you know, one conception about an entire people, which is not true. I mean, you talk to Israelis and, you know, half of them are against the practices of the Israeli government. And, you know, lots of Arabs, lots of Egyptians, lots of Muslims don't realize that. And they don't communicate. They sort of put everybody in, you know, in one pigeonhole and hate them wholesale.
How often do you go back home?
Well, home. Home is also Boulder, Colorado, so I'm sort of by home.
Your native home.
Yes, my native country. They're both homes, and very much so, because, I mean, I just wanted to point this out, because I'm about to apply for my American citizenship this year. And, you know, I love the United States just as much as I love Egypt. But I have been more... I've been back to Egypt more often than before since the revolution. I've been back about five or six times. I feel that with the Islamist influence trying to take over right now, any iota of secular activity, artistic activity, is very important. And lots of artists have been starting non-governmental initiatives in Egypt. All kinds of artistic organizations have been springing up in the last 2 years since the revolution as a reaction to the Islamists also trying to dominate the scene.
Well, we thank you for joining us today, and hope you have a great time in Baton Rouge as you prepare for your performance next Friday night at the River Center. Ashraf Sawalem will be on stage with how many performers?
The main cast is four or five major characters, but we also have the chorus and the orchestra. It's a lovely gathering, and it's wonderful to be here.
As we segue to John Word of the Baton Rouge Advocate, John, will you be reviewing this?
I don't know that it's in the plan. I review the symphony, and we're a little bit limited on how much we review. But this sounds like a wonderful performance, and I'm so impressed with your guest today. Enjoyed hearing him.
Yeah.
Just hearing him speak, as Kevin, the producer, said, beautiful resonant voice. And, of course, it's, his whole career is about his voice, so I'm not surprised that he has a nice speaking voice as well as a singing voice.
Well, thank you, Ashra.
Thanks.
Take care, my friend, and good luck. John Wirt, stepping to the microphone, the man who reviews film and music for the Baton Rouge Advocate, and he has been a busy bee early this year since we last visited with him. B.B. King, what did you think of him?
I saw B.B. King for the first time in the 80s, and so he would have been in his maybe his middle 50s about then. So he's 87 years old now, and he wandered a bit during the performance. Not physically, but verbally. He would talk and sit, and you know, he's an older gentleman at this point. And I could tell that people loved to see him. I think the place might have been sold out, I'm not sure. But they loved to see him and wanted to see him, and you know, there's such affection for him. Sometimes the reward is just in seeing the performer in front of you, this legend of music or theater, whatever it might be. His performance, it was, you couldn't say it's one of his, it was one of his great performances. So it brings up this whole idea of should a performer keep going, or should maybe they stop at some point?
Willie Nelson, I think this is his third trip to Baton Rouge in the last few years at the Varsity, which seems to be where he likes to appear.
Seems to be a January occasion, almost annually.
How is Willie's about 77 now, I think.
Now, Willie, how old is he? I don't remember his exact age. I think he's right about 80 or just about to turn 80. Yeah, I think he's just about to turn 80. You're going to check it. Willie delivers, absolutely. One thing I noticed, that he had his son out there, Lucas, and Lucas sounds so much like his dad, as fathers and sons do.
You are correct. April 30th, Willie Hugh Nelson.
He will be 80 years old.
80 years old.
And of course, he's got a brand new album, and he'll probably be playing somewhere, because that's what he does. And as I say, he still delivers, but it was interesting that he had some of the folks on stage with him. Duke, maybe more work than in years past. Lucas, his son, who Willie's 80. I think Lucas is only about 25 years old. But Lucas sounds so much like his dad, and he's very talented. So here's Willie bringing his son up, and I think his son will carry on the tradition, because he certainly seemed to please people at the Varsity that night.
And Willie Nelson, in addition to being a singer, he's a cultural figure, cultural icon. So people respond to him. He wouldn't have to say a word and he'd get a reaction.
He works on multiple levels. And believe it or not, one time I saw in the same room sitting there together Governor Edwin Edwards and Willie Nelson. And that was a memorable moment in my little journalism career.
I recall 30 years ago when Edwin Edwards was running for governor the third time against David Connor Treen, he had On the Road Again as his theme song.
Edwin Edwards is a country music fan, right?
He is. He was once spotted at a Johnny Cash concert at the House of Blues in New Orleans.
I spotted him. Did you spot him?
Yeah.
You were there,
that's
too?
It's been a long time, yeah.
Yeah. Mid-90s, 94. Again, that's speaking of performers who eventually stop. Johnny didn't perform much after that.
Well,
probably
Johnny,
because
Johnny,
you know, he had some serious illness.
Well, and he dropped dead
for many
in his
years.
Early 70s, too. So he did not last as long as B.B. King and Willie Nelson have. Willie has lived a full life. We just heard from Ashraf Sawalem. He doesn't smoke. He takes care of himself. He protects that voice. As we know, Willie got busted a few years ago for smoking marijuana in Louisiana.
Around Lafayette, right?
I think it was Lake Charles.
Willie has the kind of voice I don't think that needs protection the way your previous guest needs. He needs to protect a beautiful
different
voice.
Kind of vocal quality.
And Whitney Houston is a good example
of
that.
Whitney Houston, she messed herself up.
She destroyed her voice. And Clive Davis, the great Columbia executive, records executive, saw that happening, and I think he talks about it in his new book, which sounds like it's going to be a good read.
Diana Ross turned 69 next month. She was at the River Center with the symphony, and reading between the lines in your review, I gather you were unimpressed.
I'll tell you what, when I see older performers who do deliver, like Willie Nelson or Aerosmith, those guys are in their late 50s and early 60s. Aerosmith truly delivered when they played their recent concert at the New Orleans Arena. I really want to give credit to the older performers who can deliver, and that's on stage and in the recording studio too. And I always do, more so than a lot of people, because a lot of people will say, oh, this artist is over 60, they're over 70, it's finished. Mm-hmm. But I think sometimes it's just prejudice against their age. Diana Ross, I was not pleased with the performance, honestly. And part of it is because I think her voice, she's older now, I think her voice has declined quite a bit. And I didn't like the way she went off stage constantly. And as I said in the review, whatever momentum she might have built in the concert was lost. I think Diana, honestly, I think she could retire. I don't think it would be a bad move.
I don't think she's going to retire. There's too much money to be made by continuing to sing. I hear her partner with the Supremes, Mary Wilson, who is still performing, is coming this way and will perform at LSU in the near future. So we look forward to hearing her.
Mary is, I talked to her once many years ago, very, very nice. Of course, Diana has her reputation for being a diva. And well, there's a recent incident recently in Hollywood.
When you're that good, sometimes maybe you're you get a pass. Willie Nelson is a hawk on course, he points out, was busted in Jennings. So don't smoke pot in Jennings if law enforcement officers are in near vicinity. Now, speaking of performers who are of a seasoned quality, who will be on stage Sunday night at the Oscars at the Dolby Theater on Hollywood Boulevard. Barbara Streisand, age 70, will be on stage. And Shirley Bassey, surprisingly, making her first performance at an Oscar ceremony at age 76. And you talk about somebody who still has it. She doesn't perform a lot, but last month in Hamburg, this is a bootleg recording, January 24th, not even a month ago, here was Shirley Bassey singing a song that you'll probably hear Sunday night at the Oscar ceremonies. Lady from Tiger Bay, recognized as the greatest female singer to ever come from the UK, will be at the Oscars for the first time. She's synonymous with James Bond.
Three theme songs, Goldfinger, Diamonds Are Forever, which we just heard, and Moonraker.
And that's not lip-syncing there. That's 76 years old. She's still got it.
I was listening closely to that, and I heard her hit that
the high note.
That great note. She can still do it.
Yeah. And Barbara Streisand's not bad at age 70. Yeah,
I think so, too.
Yeah. So it should be quite a presentation, independent of the awards, having these two great female singers, perhaps the two greatest female singers of their generation, who will be on stage, along with Adele, one of John Wirt's favorites.
Yes, I like Adele. She sold so many records. It's amazing. I reviewed Adele's first album, I think, and I'm not sure. I've done so much stuff over the years, I can't remember all the stuff I've done. But she's got a great voice, and I assume that Shirley Bassey and Adele will do some sort of James Bond theme song segment together. They've got to do that. I don't see how they can't have the two of them on stage singing at the same time.
Well, I look forward to seeing Shirley Bassey. I wish she would perform more in the United States. She does not get out that much, but she will be on stage in Los Angeles for the first time at the Oscar ceremonies. Hard to believe she's never been invited before, but she will be there Sunday night. And as you note in today's Advocate, John Wirt, the movie writer, Louisiana is well represented as far as the nominees.
Beasts of the Southern Wild, a small film with a low budget, independently produced. And, yeah, it has four Oscar nominations. And I don't quite remember how to pronounce the actress's first name.
That's a tough one.
Quivanchene Wallace from Homa, who was 5 years old when she got the role, 6 years old when she worked in the movie, in the production. She's nine now, and she's gotten a lot of publicity, and is probably on to more projects already.
She plays Hush Puppy in Beasts of the Southern Wild. Now, she may very well win. Would she be the youngest winner of all time for best actress in a leading role?
She's the youngest nominee for Best Actress. Now, I don't expect her to win. I don't expect any awards for Beasts of the Southern Wild.
You don't.
It's a very, very small movie. Not many people, if you think about it, not many people have seen the movie. It's only earned $12 million. Now, compare that to the maybe $300 million that Skyfall, the James Bond movie, has earned. Not very few people, relatively speaking, have even seen this movie. I think its best shot is maybe Best Adapted Screenplay. It's a possibility, but that brings up another Louisiana connection, because Tony Kushner, who grew up in Lake Charles, Louisiana,
right,
is the screenwriter for Lincoln, and Tony Kushner is nominated for Best Adapted Screenplay as well.
Maureen Dowd, in her column in the New York Times last Sunday, pointed out many inaccuracies in the screenplay, Lincoln, and Kushner did not respond well to this when he was challenged. Says he's not going to change a thing, that they're making a proverbial mountain out of a molehill. But when you do a historical movie like this, it needs to be accurate.
You're making a movie. You're not writing a history book. In a history book, you would want facts to be, you want all the facts and accuracy, but they're creating a drama. They're creating a drama here. They're creating entertainment. They're basing it on historical fact. It's their job to make an entertaining, engaging.
But there is a
movie.
Difference between Lincoln and Oliver Stone's Nixon, for example, or Oliver Stone's JFK. He took many liberties that were not taken in Lincoln. Lincoln, I think most people who see this film think it's the real deal, that this is what actually happened. And Daniel Day-Lewis, do you think he'll win?
I think he's the front runner. And Lincoln is the front runner for every category that it's nominated. And it's got 12 nominations.
Did you like Argo?
Argo is a great, entertaining movie. This is a movie that people like, and it's popular. And it was kind of a shock that Ben Affleck didn't get a nomination for his direction of Argo.
And some inaccuracies in Argo as well, but it was a fun film. And we'll return with John Wirt, the man of the fun section, after this 90-second timeout on WRKF. This is Jim Engster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. Kevin Gallagher producing, and John Wirt in studio. He writes about films and music for the Baton Rouge Advocate, as well as about culture in general and people who perform in this community. 297-5633 is your number, 877-217-5757. Inkster Show at WRKF.org. John Wirt, before we get back to the movies that are up for awards Sunday night at the Oscar ceremony in Hollywood, listener David wants to know your assessment of Bill Maher's performance at the River Center a few weeks ago on January 27th, I believe.
Yeah, I went to the performance and I wrote a review, and I don't think Bill Maher is the funniest guy on the planet by any means. He's got an audience, and the audience that showed up loved him and were very, very loud and enthusiastic about him, and you could tell that they like his liberal angle, his liberal comedy. You know, he's famously known as a liberal comedian, and that's what he does. And he's found an audience. He's on HBO, and his HBO show has been running for some time now. So he's very successful at what he does. I think there's some anger in his performance, real pointed kind of comments that I don't think are really funny, but they do hit home with his particular audience.
Mm-hmm. There were protesters outside.
I hear that this group of protesters shows up in Baton Rouge every now and then. They're a group from Mississippi, a Pentecostal congregation from Mississippi.
Now, why would they not like Bill Maher?
Bill Maher is an atheist. He is pronounced an atheist, and of course, they don't care for that.
To say the least. And I must say, if Bill Maher had given that same performance 35 years ago in this community, he probably would have spent the night in parish prison.
Well, of course, he and the filmmakers behind Life of Brian.
Yeah, O.C. Brown, the DA here, once banned Life of Brian when I was in school at LSU. He banned it from the Union Theater, saying it was blasphemous. And that was rather tame compared to some of Mr. Maher's pointed comments.
Well, the Pentecostals said that Bill Maher was blasphemous.
297-5633. Ben Daly and Baker. Ben Daly, you're on the air with John Wirt.
Yes, good morning, both. The great musicians notwithstanding, there's a lot of great local talent. And to wit, last night I saw a wonderful performance at Baton Rouge High with Stephanie Jordan, the niece of Alvin Baptiste.
Yeah, both of you've seen
and
her.
I was wondering whether John was there, and did he? If so, what comments?
That performance was not promoted that well, but she's a great singer.
I interviewed Stephanie, and we had a story about her in last week's Friday Fun Section, and I do think she's a wonderful artist. I was not at the performance. In fact, I couldn't be there. I was at the symphony, and I was assigned to review the symphony orchestra last night.
One of your faves, Kenny Neal, is scheduled to be in the studio Monday. You like him a lot,
I need
don't
to catch
you?
Up with Kenny, too.
All right, 297-5633. Mason on South Sherwood. Mason, you're on the air with John Wirt.
Oh, thank you both, and good morning. I'm a huge Frank Zappa fan, and his son has been doing the tribute show now for about a decade, and I've been floored by just the ease of the performances of really complex music. Have you ever seen the show? And if you did, what did you think of it? Thank you.
I've not seen. You're talking about Dweezil Zappa, and he does a show called Zappa Plays Zappa, and they were at the House of Blues in New Orleans recently. You know, I've wanted to get an interview with Dweezil, but have not been able to get it. And, yeah, he's very talented, and Frank Zappa is a super talent, a great 20th-century rock talent, and very versatile. He could do all kinds of music, a genius of music, for sure. I did talk to Gail Zappa, Dweezil's mother, Frank's wife, once, and she was delightful as well. We had a story about her and some reissues she was working on for her husband's music, so, yeah. Zappa, but all the Zappas are great.
John in Port Allen asked, does J.W. Think Beasts of the Southern Wild is the premier avant-garde cinematic experience of the 21st century? John writes, Beasts is a masterpiece in every sense of the word.
Did I write that?
No. This is another J.W., or, well, I think it's asking you, J.W., John Wirt, whether you think it's a cinematic masterpiece.
I think it's a very interesting film, and I stayed with it and really enjoyed it. Unlike Mr. Inkster, who left early during the screening.
Not because I wanted to, because I have some other responsibilities, but...
We had a press screening, and Jim was there, and I don't see Jim at many press screenings, and I was there, and maybe a few others, and so... I'm enchanted with the movie.
And I make a big scene and walk out in the middle of it.
I told you, you missed all the great stuff that happened after that. Is it the greatest movie? No. By no means is it the greatest movie ever produced. But it's got a lot going for it. And what I want to see is what comes from these people who created this wonderful small movie. I want to see what comes from them later, the other work they're going to produce, because I think you could be, and a lot of them are very young. The director is only 30 years old, I think. And the lead actress who's nominated for an Oscar is only 9 years old. Imagine what they'll do from henceforward.
It's a beautiful film, though. Absolutely breathtaking, and showcases Louisiana. Django Unchained.
Yes.
You're smiling.
I love Django Unchained. It's one of my favorite movies of the year. And it's my favorite of any Quentin Tarantino movie that I've seen. I have a top 10 list that I assembled a while ago, and I put Django at number 2, right after Lincoln, which is number 1. Did you see Django?
I have not seen it, but I notice it's still playing here, and I do plan on seeing that. It's a very long film, so it's kind of, you know.
It's probably too long.
Yeah, I might have to walk out in the middle of that one, too.
If you missed the last 20 minutes, it won't matter.
But it's like a three-hour film, isn't it, which by today's standards is real long.
It is long, and a lot of critics have said it's a half hour or 20 minutes too long. Quentin Tarantino is enthusiastic filmmaker, creator, and I think he loves what he's doing, and he loves the work he creates so much that he wants to give you as much of it as he can. And sometimes the artist is not so objective and gives you too much.
I liked it better when they only had 5 nominees for Best Film. Now they've got 10, right? 2, 4, 6, 8, 10. So why do we have...
I think it's 9 this year.
Okay,
The number may vary from year to year.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. You're right. That's twice you've been right. Right about Willie Nelson, you're right about 9 films.
I'm not right about everything.
Well, but 9 films, that's too many films.
It brings attention to the films and maybe brings people into the theaters. And I think part of it is commercial motivation. But if this list brings people to see good movies, I think it's a good thing.
You think Lincoln's going to win?
I think Lincoln is the front runner for, again, everything that it's nominated for.
So Spielberg's going to win, too, for Best Director?
Well, you have something called Silver Linings Playbook, which is a great, amusing and dramatic film with wonderful performances and an amazing ensemble cast. And you have Robert De Niro in a supporting role. He's nominated for a Best Supporting Actor role this year. This is one of the best Robert De Niro performances I've ever seen.
And there's been a big push for him to win this award, noting that he hasn't won an Academy Award in over 30 years.
Wow.
He's one of the great actors of our time.
And this is one of his...
What's your favorite De Niro performance?
Looking back on them all, a lot of times it's the last thing you saw that they did that you liked. And I really liked this performance in Silver Linings Playbook.
I liked Cape Fear.
Cape Fear. I don't think Cape Fear is all that well-regarded a movie.
I know, but I liked his performance. Remember in the original Cape Fear when Robert Mitchum played the bad guy?
Yeah.
Much more understated. He was great, too, but De Niro, mm-hmm. he was evil incarnate in Cape Fear.
Yes.
297-5633. Best actor in a leading role is Daniel Day-Lewis, a foregone conclusion in this.
He's so good in Lincoln, and when you see it, we're alive today in the year 2013, okay? This is as close as we're ever going to get to seeing Lincoln walking in the White House, riding a horse in the Petersburg battlefield after the slaughter that took place there for months and months and months. As I said in my story today in The Advocate, it's a transformative performance where the actor absolutely disappears into the character. And that's even more impressive because it's a famous character that many, all of us know.
297-5633 is your number. 877-217-5757 for John Wirt, entertainment writer for the Baton Rouge Advocate. I'm told that our man from Tibet, Anam Tupton, is unable to be with us today, so John will round out the hour, I hope. He's not getting up to leave early.
See you later, Jim.
as I did in Beasts of the Southern Wild. But that film, I think, will be regarded years from now as a cutting-edge film.
they've got a lot of things going there. They're grassroots. They approach to filmmaking. They have a concept for making films, and they're not alone in this. A number of people are working in this direction. It's something new in filmmaking, and it's entering the mainstream, and may even be more so in later years.
Best actress in a lead role. Who's the odds-on favorite? Our young lady from Beasts of the Southern Wild, Miss Wallace, is the hometown favorite, but who do you think will win?
Jessica Chastain in Zero Dark Thirty, which is the drama about mm-hmm. the hunt and killing of Osama bin Laden.
Did you like that film?
That film is, almost the entire film is edge of your seat. Suspense and tension, and it's a great film by who's proven to be now a great director, Kathryn Bigelow.
Best actor in a supporting role. You noted Robert De Niro, but this is like a who's who of the acting community nominated.
It really is.
Alan Arkin, he was great in Argo.
You saw Argo, now.
I did. Yeah. I did, and I really liked it.
Yes, he's so funny. I love him in that. I'd be happy. I mean, all of these performances are worthy of recognition in the Best Supporting Actor category. Mm-hmm. I suspect Tommy Lee Jones will win, but actually De Niro. I hope De Niro wins.
CB says that De Niro's best performance was The King of Comedy. That was a great film, wasn't it?
The Martin Scorsese
film
from quite a while ago. It's been so long since I've seen it.
Yeah. He was stalking Jerry Lewis, wasn't he?
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, of all the people to stalk. 297-5633. Mike in Sherwood. Mike, you're on the air with John Word of the Advocate.
Hello.
Yes.
Hello.
Sir. Yes.
This is Mike. Thanks for taking my call. I was wondering if you could compare the current Spielberg-Lincoln movie and Daniel Day-Lewis's performances to earlier performances. I think I've seen movies with Raymond Massey and
Henry Fonda.
One other.
What do Henry
you think?
Fonda.
What do you think?
Young Mr. Lincoln. Those are some classic, especially Young Mr. Lincoln with Henry Fonda. That's a classic. I haven't examined them or studied them, to be honest with you.
Well, it appears that Lincoln is going to win a whole lot of awards. Spielberg, despite a career that exceeds all other directors, how many times has he won for Best Director? Only once, hasn't he?
Twice, I believe. Twice, I think that's in my story here.
Okay, all right. So that's the third time John's been right. What were the other victories for him? Do you recall?
Well, let's see. I'm trying to remember now.
And you know what his first film was?
The Holocaust film that he did. I can't remember the name right now, believe it or not.
But his first film was Duel with Dennis Weaver. And, of course, he has had a storied career.
Schindler's List must have been.
That's the one. That's the one you were talking about. And I was looking to see exactly...
Color Purple, maybe. He's got so many, many films.
Yeah, he has a, you talk about a catalog of classics. I'm just looking at, he had Lincoln, Indiana Jones, Schindler's List, Jurassic Park, Empire of the Sun, The Color Purple. You go on and on. Raiders of the Last Ark, Close Encounters of the Third Kind, Jaws. The Sugar Land Express.
Right, that's early film.
But Duel, November 10th, 1971, with Dennis Weaver. That was his first film, and he won for Schindler's List and for Saving Private Ryan. So, John Wirt, you're 3-for-3. Saving Private Ryan, 1998, with Tom Hanks.
Of course, yes.
Barry in Mid-City. Barry, you're on the air with John Wirt.
Hey, great program. Again, I just wanted to mention I am the rabbi for the Kushner family in Lake Charles, Louisiana.
Sure.
And I helped Tony at the passing of his father just not too long ago. And I just wanted the listeners to know it was really quite remarkable. And we handled the funeral and burial and everything in such a meticulous manner. I thought it reflected playwright Kushner's own approach to life.
Well, he is an amazing man, and I think he's going to win.
I really hope so.
He's the front runner, sure, and that's another Lincoln nomination. And I did a small interview of Tony Kushner that we ran in the fun section a while ago, and he is a great, great talent.
Well, thank you, John Wirt. You're saying Louisiana will be shut out with the possible exception of Mr. Kushner, despite your
that's my prediction.
Your glowing review of Django Unchained and A Beast of the Southern Wild. John Wirt says it's going to be a big night for Lincoln. We'll follow it, and we'll talk about it more on Monday. Until then, for Kevin Gallagher, I'm Jim Engster. Have a great weekend, and stay tuned.
Podcasts of The Jim Engster Show are available at WRKF.org. The Jim Engster Show is produced in association with the Louisiana Radio Network and is copyrighted by WRKF for the private use of its audience. Any other use of any portion of this program without the written consent of WRKF is prohibited. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and do not necessarily reflect the views of WRKF, its officers, and members.